Welcome to the worst nightmare of all. Reality.
Explore the lesser-known stories of our unknown world. Join the pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcast into the Paranormal UK Radio Network at paukradio.com. Now on this episode, I'm talking to not one, but two guests, and we're talking about all things UAP and hopefully some paranormal subjects as well. So in alphabetical order, so Greg doesn't feel left out and pushed to the back, we've got Ash Ellis, who has a lifetime of interest in UFOs and is the owner of ufoidentified.co.uk, which is a database of UFO sightings in the UK, as well as investigating cases that are reported right across the northwest of England. Ash heads a team of dedicated investigators and researchers, and is also the co-host of Pursuit of the Paranormal podcast. And Greg Tomlinson got into the paranormal whilst watching Arthur C. Clarke, and also has a fascination with UFOs, which started at a very young age. And it's followed him all the way through life, and his interest has strengthened over the years, especially with the advent of the internet, where he's been able to do more research and ultimately been part of a couple of paranormal investigation teams. And at the moment, he also co-hosts the Pursuit of the Paranormal podcast with Ash, which started in 2020. So, guys, thank you very much for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Shall we start off with the really big news that's happened recently, which is, of course, the recent Pentagon UAP report. Who wants to start?
It's you, Ash.
Yeah,
it's
your idea.
That is your baby.
Yeah, that's UFO is just more my domain. Mm-hmm. So I think it was last August when they first requested this sort of information as part of the fiscal bill for 2021. So we've been quite a long wait. And obviously it was signed into law in December, and then they had 6 months from then to produce this report. I think from the start, most of us knew that we weren't going to get much from it. It's been saying for 50 plus years, they're going to tell us what they know, disclosures coming, and then nothing ever happens. They give us bits to keep us hanging on, and then nothing actually comes off it. So when the report dropped, which was about 10 days ago now from recording this, late Friday night, when this report dropped in the UK. And read the 9 pages pretty quickly. And my initial thoughts were there's not much in this. They've left out the previous 60 years of UFO history and gone just from 2004, been having these unidentified occurrences in military training areas. Being caught on radar and other sensors. And basically out of the 100 and so that they've captured, there's only been one they've been able to identify. So there is some good stuff in there. They are saying that they are capturing unidentified anomalies on radar, and they're categorising it as these different categories, what it could be, just balloons, birds, just glitches on the software. It could be other, which encompasses quite a lot of things, but one of them is that it's advanced technology by either other governments or what they call foreign adversaries. It doesn't really say too much. Obviously, they stay clear of saying anything possibly otherworldly or non-human. I think this, on purpose, they've stayed clear of mentioning that. But for me personally, I know the UFO community has been quite split. Some have really love the report and it's the big step and going forward, but the other half are saying there's nothing new in there, which there isn't for people that are embedded in the field. There's nothing new in there. We knew all this stuff was happening. We knew that they were looking into it. We knew they were investigating it anyway. You know, they always denied it. There's some good points to it that they do want to have a more streamlined process. They want more money to do it, which to me is a fundraising exercise, which can only be a good thing. But then my concerns with that is, if they do have these more reports and these more investigations into it, are we going to see any of it anyway? So that was my initial take on it. How do you think about it, Greg?
So we discussed this the other day as well, me and Ash, and I'm more of the mainstream person, the lay person, as it were. That's, I obviously have an interest in the UFOs and UAPs, but that's more Ash's side of things. So I've looked at the report more of, say, normal person, as it were, the man on the street. And I quite liked it. I quite liked that. A, it was quite short, so that was quite good, and I didn't have to wade through loads of jargon and whatnot. But I think the fact, like Ash just alluded to, I think the fact that there was this other category that speaks quite loudly to a normal person. It's like, well, if you don't know what it is and you're lumping it under other, what's, and then you're asking for money. So you clearly want to investigate it, or there is a likelihood that you're going to start investigating it. You need more money for it. So you're giving a certain amount of information to Congress to sort of say, well, it could be, couldn't be, whatever. So for a normal person like me, I think it gave more than we've ever had before. It's the fact that somebody's come out there and said, actually, there is this other category. We don't know what it is, but it goes in there. So I think, personally, that's quite a big step. And there's not many first world governments that will come out and say that. I know, like, Chile and South America, they're quite open, some of the air forces, with the information that they give out. But for, like, US and European stuff, that's quite unheard of, I think. But yeah, I think what they didn't say outweighed what they did say. I think they could have gone a bit further. But yeah.
So do you think there's more to come then? Do you think there's going to be more reports?
Yes. And the reason I say that is that it'll be a slow drip feed again. It always has been a drip feed of information. I think this is one of the bigger drips, as it were. But as soon as that money starts rolling in, and they go, well, we need this money because we need to invest in technology that we can try and find out and study these things more. As soon as money gets involved, people take an interest. So, like, all these wars in different countries, there's such a big money machine that why would they want to stop a war when it's bringing in so much money? I know that's a different way of looking at it, but yeah, as soon as they open a tap for some money, they'll just drip enough that they can get a little bit more, a little bit more money. That's my personal opinion.
I mean, the dates are interesting to me because they've basically said, like, okay, we've got a blank slate and we're starting from 2004, mm-hmm. Which is the date of one of the first three videos that were leaked in 2017. Mm-hmm. So in the cynical side of me says that they're only saying from 2004 because we already know that information's out there, so they have to go 2004, so their hand was forced because them videos are already in the public domain.
And if you've got David Fravor coming out on Joe Rogan and all the podcasts, yeah, and he's the guy from 2004. They're, like you say, they were forced to do that. They had to choose at least that date. Had, yeah, to be in there. So
if the earliest video that we had was 2010, then the report probably would have been from 2010, there's been 50 of these sightings and that have been unidentified so far. So that's my sort of cynical side of it, is they're only telling us what, like I said, what we already know, that it's from 2004. There could have been lots before then, but they've not been leaked. We're not aware of them, so they're just not mentioning them. And then obviously, going back to the money side of it again, like Jeremy Corbell is one that's releasing lots of these videos with George Knapp, and he got asked the question, is who's leaking these videos to him? Are the government or the military purposely leaking the videos so that they then have to come out and say that they're theirs and they're real, to then say, we have to investigate it, so we need money? It's just, I think with anything with the government, there's always going to be questions. And even if with the US government coming out and saying UFOs are real, UAP is real, there's always going to be the doubt, because it is the government saying it. There's always going to be a doubt there too. I don't think we're any closer to disclosure or the truth, then we were just not anywhere near with them what we were before.
So do you think then that the American government, and let's go right to the top of government, the president, whoever that may be, do you think that they, whilst they're in office, they are told the truth? And so obviously when they leave office, they are bound by whatever their equivalent of our official Secrets Act is. So for instance, you know, I mean, could Donald Trump know the truth? You know, the horrendous thought that it is. But could he have been told the truth about UAPs or, you know, stuff that obviously isn't in the report, which is a lot more detailed? Or do you think that this is genuinely as much as they know, or do you think they are holding stuff back?
Well, I mean, I believe the full report was something like 70 pages and it's full of videos. And I think one person described it as like a sci-fi movie with all these videos in. So, I mean, you'd assume that the president would have access to that side of the report. In terms of whether they're told everything, like when they first come to office or whatever, I don't think they would, because I think with presidents, you get 4 years, sometimes you get 8 years. They're very short term. Whereas I think these projects and the people running these projects are there 20 years, 30 years. And there's the black budget money, there's what they call like the black government size, the like sort of black projects that you don't hear about. I think they're above anything that sort of even the president's told. Because the short term, they're there for 4 years, sometimes eight. And there's something, anything new would be coming out with any president. That's just my personal thoughts on it.
What do you think, Greg?
I think the same. I think it goes way above the president. He's just, or she is just a pawn in the politics game. They're there. One person can't know everything. So you've got Congress and you've got these people that are there for life. Like Ash said, they outdate every president term. Yeah, I think they probably know enough to stop them talking, which is probably what's just come out in that report.
Yeah.
We know stuff. We don't know what it is. We keep looking.
Yeah.
Then that kind of sort of, because the problem you've got is you've got a president, Donald Trump, for example, who stands on a stage and you don't know what he's going to say at any given moment. And if he comes out and says, look, we know that they're real, we've been interacting with them for 50, 60 years or longer, that's some liability that you do not want. You can't control that. So why would you tell him?
That's a very good point. That is
you only have to look back at JFK, for example, and there's people say that he was going to start talking about stuff, and lo and behold, he didn't make it.
Yeah.
So,
we're getting into the whole realm of conspiracy theories.
And it's not something that we ever get to on our podcasts.
No, I mean, I'm fascinated by conspiracy theories, especially around JFK and that sort of thing. Should we move on to the website, UFO Identified website that you've set up?
Yeah.
What the idea was behind that, when it started, what sort of information you get on there, and you know, any sort of local UFO sightings that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so basically, like I said at the start of the show, I sort of had a lifetime interest in the subject since my own sighting when I was 10 years old in the Northwest. And then probably the last 3 or 4 years, obviously because life happens and then school and work, sort of don't really have the time, but the last 3 or 4 years, sort of started getting back into it more seriously, looking at the research and finding stuff out. And then when COVID happened, I was on furlough for like 12 months. So probably around this time last year, probably a bit earlier, more April time, April, May time, I was just spending all my time looking into the UFO stuff. And it was just hard to find anything from the UK. Everything UK-based was years ago. You saw that the old cases from the 80s and 90s, which is good stuff to have, it's good knowledge to have, but I was like, there's a gap here from what's happened in the last 5 years, 10 years. So that's sort of the idea behind it was to try and fill that gap, was to look at it from a UK perspective, but modern times, because everything you hear is America. America's got all these task forces. America's releasing all this information. This has been happening. This is what's happening now in America. Whereas there's literally nothing for the UK. So that's why the website was set up, to sort of try and fill that gap of modern UK sightings, like from basically from 2020 onwards. So I set up the website and the Northwest UFO group to basically mainly focus on the Northwest, because that's where we're based. And we can get out to any local sightings that get reported. But also, we also do concentrate on UK sightings for the whole of the UK. I think on average, my website receives around 10 sightings a month reported to us from across the UK. And then over the past 12 months, I've been building my own database of UFO sightings, and I've been getting data from UFON, from Bufora, from the National UFO Reporting Centre, from other community groups, so like the Birmingham UFO Group, Cornwall UFO Group, the Swansea UFO Network. So I've been working with them, basically collating all sightings that have been happening in the last 12 months, and built a database of basically building a picture of what's been happening in the UK. Now I've been doing monthly reports, looking at the data, what's been reported, where it's been reported, most popular days, what's been seen, and then just collating it all for just for information purposes, really. So you can go on the website and you can see what's been reported, where the hotspots are in the UK. Because like when if you ask on the UFO group, where's the hotspot in the UK, there'd be 40, 50 places get listed. And because they have been hotspots over the years. But I'm interested in what's being seen now and where it's being seen now, not what was popular 30 years ago. So that was the idea behind the website. And that grew into having people that volunteer their time to write articles, to investigate the reports that come in, to help with the running of the site, which is not an easy task, running a site, because not stuff that we do. Obviously, COVID's restricted us in terms of getting out and talking to witnesses. So that's been mainly desk research and desk investigations, talking on the phone to witnesses rather than going out and visiting them. And obviously, with restrictions being relaxed now, next 12 months, we've got a lot of big plans to grow in the team, grow in the website, putting more events on that people can come along and attend. That's the website, really.
So have you noticed any trends you mentioned about hotspots and trends? Have you noticed any from recent reports?
Yeah, so one that's actually been, like, talking about the 90s, there's a trend that's probably not really gone away, and that's the triangle. Yeah, the classic black triangle sighting that gets seen, I mean, all over the world, really, but obviously it was popular in the UK in the 90s. And in January 22nd, I believe it was, there was five triangles, UFOs reported on the same day in the UK. And they're all around the west, like west corridor of England. So over the course of, I think it was 16 hours, there's five different reports of this black triangle being seen. And that was super, like, it stood out initially because so many reports in one day of the same thing. So that was fascinating. Again, that's only what gets reported. So, I mean, they say that only 5 to 10% of sightings get reported anywhere. So you're saying that five people saw this black triangle on the same day. How many people actually saw it?
And didn't report it, yeah.
Yeah. And there was one of the reports that day said that he saw this black triangle being escorted by a grey military-type aircraft. And then obviously you're able to look at, like, the apps and the flight tracking software and stuff. At the time and date that he said he saw this military aircraft escorting this black triangle, there was military aircraft in the area where they saw it. So it does add credence to that this object, whatever it was seen. So again, and in February, there was, again, I think there was 4 throughout the month of triangle-shaped UFOs being reported. I think that's just always been like a present feature of UFOs is gray. What is reported as purple as well. Just triangle. It's been a mainstay really throughout 2020 and going into 2021.
So you mentioned the west of the country, which is obviously where we are. Can you be a bit more specific with the locations where they were, seen?
Yeah, I can do. So there's one scene in Stockport, which is obviously Manchester, and then it went. Then it was Wolverhampton, then somewhere in South Wales near to Cardiff, and then Bristol, and then I think it was somewhere in Hampshire. But I had it plotted on the map, and it's basically near enough a straight line up from like Stockport and then down. Like basically, like it from down the M6. Basically, that's what it looked like. It was it had been going down the M6. This triangle. But that's like, but it was obviously because I looked through all the reports, and there's around 40 a month that I look at, and it just stood out immediately. These five sightings. And there's a similar one in, although not the Northwest, this is one in, there was one in the Northwest, one of it's in Rochdale. So it's Rochdale, Ipswich, and two other places, I can't remember right now. But they all reported a similar object, not triangle, but just a similar object. And again, all on the same day. So whether it's the same object traveling to these different areas or just something being seen, but there is definitely things being seen and things being seen on the same day in different parts of the country, which just adds like support to that. There is something, and, like, people that are not related to each other at all, just completely independent people reporting seeing the same thing in different parts of the country, but on the same day. So I've been finding some fascinating stuff, and the reports for them can all be found on the website, like in the investigations and all the, like, looking into it, and the investigation side of it's all on there as well to have a look at.
Do you get involved with investigations as well, Greg?
Not into the UFOs, no. That's firmly Ash's side. I'm the paranormal side. So we're just waiting for sort of some of the lockdown stuff to lift, and then we're back off out in the group I am, and we'll do our paranormal side of the investigations. But UFO side, I don't have enough time.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. Well, can you tell me a bit about paranormal stuff that you do then, but your investigations?
Yeah, so where I am in West Oxfordshire, in Witney, I'm part of a paranormal group. We've been together nearly a couple of years. We were unfortunate that we sort of, after the first 6 months of being together, lockdown happened, and been a bit of a nightmare. So, we do have Facebook page. We've got a website, which currently is not inactive, but we haven't been able to update it really, because we only put up stuff from our investigations and stuff that we believe shows some kind of paranormal evidence. There's a lot of paranormal stuff that is on the internet at the moment, same with UFOs as well. There's a lot of people just putting fake stuff up there. Quite a lot of bad fake stuff up there. Quite a lot of stuff that is, it's just not even paranormal. And where people will question it, like myself, I'm happy. And this is exactly what my team do. We will repeat something that we've done that's caused, say, a knocking sound. So if we've asked a question and a spirit or whatever, there's been a knock or something's reacted to the question, we will then ask the question again, maybe slightly different way, so that we can replicate the evidence. Because once, it could just be coincidence, you're in an old house. Multiple times, like Ash said, you've got multiple witnesses, multiple different times, then that adds a bit of credibility to what you're doing. That's our aim, really, is to try and capture stuff we've been unable to debunk. That's essentially what we try and do, is debunk our own evidence and get to the point that whatever you're left with at that point fits into potentially the other category, like we mentioned on the report. So we're just a small team, we're just waiting for lockdown to finish. We've got loads of investigations in properties that are old that nobody's been investigating in before, that we've been lucky enough to have contacts that have allowed us or will allow us to go into those places. It was an exciting time coming up, because we'll be back on the road, as it were.
So what would be your, I mean, pre-COVID, what would be your standout investigation so far then?
So we investigated in a local, it was a shop in a local town near us. And due to the nature of the person who runs the shop, we're unable to say what shop it was. It was an independent little place. And lots of things happened there. We've got it on our YouTube channel, all the stuff that we gathered. At one point, I walked through a corridor and smelled a smoke, like heavy smoke. And I used to be a smoker, so I know what that, and be around my parent. Well, my dad used to smoke in a football club, so that it's quite a distinctive smell, isn't it? I walked through this hallway from one room to another, smelled it, turned around, told everybody, and I walked back. I never smelled it after that. And then we've got it on video of us talking about tea parties and such like, because there was some, it was felt that there were some children, spirits of children there. So we were talking about a tea party, and one of my team members mentions about coming to a tea party, and then you can hear footsteps running towards the microphone. It's very weird. Same place as well that night. We've got light anomalies on camera, but not like an orb kind of like an orb going across the screen, which could be dust, could be all sorts of things. But this actually, it looks like an orb, a blurred orb, but it goes behind a chair. And you can see it go behind the chair, and I slow it down multiple times on the video. Unable to explain what that was. Didn't see it at the time, so we couldn't replicate that one. So that's an unknown thing. But yeah, quite a lot of weird stuff. Weird stuff has happened, along with voices on. We use a spirit box. I don't know if you know what a spirit box is. Yeah. So we've got this spirit box, and we were asking loads of questions. It named one of the team. It gave a load of information about why it was in this particular room. But it's all subjective, some of it. But the words are clear. It's clear, intelligent responses to the questions, rather than just so random yes, no type things. So, yeah, that was a really good investigation. You can check it out on our YouTube channel, which is Windrush Valley Paranormal. Loads of videos on there as well for some of our investigations. So, yeah.
So would you say that the area where you live is quite a hot spot for paranormal activity?
Yeah.
Why do you think that will be then? Why do you think that's particularly strong in your area?
So we're just down the road from Oxford, which has got its own history. We're down in Whitney, and there's on the estate that I live on, apparently, it's a new build estate, just in on the outskirts of Whitney. And where we are, there's been loads of battlefields, which I didn't know about. The school my children go to, it's like 500-600 year old school, and that's got like an unnatural history of deaths and plague victims, those kind of things. And Whitney itself, it, I think, is steeped in quite a deep history of, like, we had woolen mills. They were we're famous for cloths and rugs and stuff like that in Whitney, which I didn't really know about till we started looking into it. So there's a massive history where we are. And as such, there tends to be quite a steep sort of paranormal history as well. We're down the road from Minster Lovell, and there's a ruins at Minster Lovell. And a very famous guy who owned the place, he was, at the time, was one of the richest men in England, and his girlfriend, partner, wife, I think it was, they were playing hide and seek, which was a game they used to play back then. She went up into the loft. They couldn't find her and presumed she'd just gone off somewhere. And it wasn't until sometime later that they opened a chest that was in the loft, or in the attic at the time of the hall, and she was dead inside there, and there were scratches on the inside. Weirdly, it was a story that me and Ash put out on our podcast for Christmas. It's actually a very well-known story. So we're fortunate enough to have the ruins literally like 2-minute drive from my house. So we go down there a few times. It's quite a spooky place.
What do you think about ley lines? Ash, should we start with you?
Yeah, so I think, especially probably the past 6-7 months since I've been doing this podcast and I've been exploring the different areas of the paranormal. Because like I said, I'm mainly a UFO guy. Although I had one ghost experience a few years ago, which sort of opened my eyes on that side of things. But since doing the podcast and been discussing all different areas of the paranormal, we found that there's the link between UFOs, ghosts, cryptozoology, all areas of paranormal are linked, in my opinion. And I think, and there's areas around the world, in the UK, around the world, where there's high occurrences of different things happening, of all different aspects of paranormal or unusual events, high strangeness events happening in sort of certain places. And I think there's these areas of, whether it's like the magnetic fields, whether, like say, ley lines based around electromagnetic forces, whether it's these areas, these ley lines that sort of where they meet, where there's increased activity, is where unusual things happen. I think one theory that has sort of been raised in its head quite a bit is like the possibility of portals into different alternate realities or different dimensions. And when you look at where these like portals are, or where allegedly they are, it's where like the number of ley lines sort of intersect with each other. So I think, basically, like from the work I've been doing the past 7 or 8 months, I think that's what it is. That is, I'm a lot more open-minded to sort of that being a possibility. Whereas 12 months ago, I'd have been, what are you talking about? But now I'm like, it actually makes more sense than a lot of stuff that we know. And it would explain a lot of instances and a lot of events that happen. I think, and the fact that there's like this history with these places that go back like what, hundreds of thousands of years, like all our ancient ruins and ancient monuments are all linked along ley lines. I think obviously in the past when they wouldn't have been able to have the technology to do anything else, I think they would have been possibly drawn by the natural energy that you can feel around ley lines. And that's why these places become sacred areas where they build like Stonehenge and Glastonbury Tor and places like this, is because there is an energy there. And I think that if something unusual is coming in that area, it's because of this heightened energy. So I guess that's my take on ley lines.
Yeah, no, that's very plausible. And I agree with everything you said there. What about you, Greg? What do you think?
Yeah, exactly the same as Ash. Ley lines had been stuff that, being from the paranormal side, had been bits that I've been involved in part of the investigation. So I've been to a place called the Ancient Ram Inn, allegedly one of the most haunted places in the UK, and several ley lines intersect underneath it. There seems to be a lot of paranormal activities, like Ash mentioned, with places that are near or on ley lines. We spoke to a guy called John Edmonds from Stardust Ranch in America, which is, if you haven't heard the story of him, it's completely, had I had not known about the subject, you'd have said the guy was completely insane. But the more you talk to the guy, the more you understand what's happening and the whole paranormal field and UFO field, it all makes sense. This guy says that he has portals open up on his ranch. Creatures come out and he interacts with these beings and these different entities. But he also mentioned that he was on a ley line and there's a ley line that goes past him to other places in America. So who knows? It's something that seems to have some kind of draw to a lot of paranormal and UFO events. So I think people use dowsing rods. I've used a dowsing rod, and it's a very strange thing to see happen. And this thing moves with water. It happens with ley lines as well. I don't think you can discount a ley line. I think they've definitely got important part of all the things that are happening. Through history, I think are definitely have ley lines involved somewhere.
So you interviewed this guy for your podcast, Search for the Paranormal podcast. How did that start? How did you decide to do that? Did you realise it would take up as much of your time as it does? Because I know when I started this, I didn't realise at all. Who's your favourite guest that you've had on so far? And who do you hope to get on in the future?
Do you want to take how we got started, Greg?
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah. So this time, towards the end of last year, during last year, me and Ash separately played poker online. Didn't know each other before. We became admins of the same poker group on Facebook. And we're just interacting as an admin group, just doing all the bits an admin has to do on a Facebook group, which can be quite time consuming with some people on some groups. But I think Ash put up, your website and said
just go on my website and have a look at it.
Yeah, just randomly in the admin group chat. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm into UFOs and whatnot. We had a bit of a chat, and then I messaged him, and we were just chatting on a message just about UFOs and the ghost stuff. And I was like, you know what? I fancy doing a podcast. I've always wanted to do one. Should we do one? And like literally 2 weeks later, first episode was up and running. And as you just mentioned as well, it can be quite a time consuming thing. And people don't realize quite how challenging it can be. And
Second of December
was the first episode. Yeah. And we quickly realized how time consuming it was when we started editing the thing, and we were doing it together, and we were, the amount of blooper reels we've got of offcuts of things that we've said, we were just looking at each other on the Zoom call and just start laughing and not even talking. But we've been fortunate enough that every Tuesday since the 2nd of December, we've been able to put out an episode. We had a slight blip a couple of weeks ago, out of our control. But yeah, we've for nearly 8 months now, we've been,
yeah,
it's been a crazy.
I don't know how, but we've done it. We've managed it.
And the subjects we've covered. Oh, I'll pass over to Ash now. I've said my bit.
yeah. It's like Greg said, we've literally, apart from 1 week, we've had an episode every Tuesday, and we don't phone them in either. It's genuine guests. We do lots of research into the topics that we're going to be talking about. We it's a lot of work getting guests on, like especially out from all the world. We're up at like 2 a.m. interviewing someone from America because of time differences and stuff like this. So a lot goes into, as you found out, a lot goes into doing this. There's a lot of reasons why people give up, and I feel like the average podcast is like 7 episodes because people give up because don't realize the amount of work that it takes. But in terms of guests, we've had like all topics. Obviously, with my UFO interest, we sort of had it. So we'd have half UFO episodes, half sort of other paranormal, and sort of like swap between that. Which has kind of worked out pretty well. Some of the subjects we've covered, we've never even considered. We had a guy on recently talking about demonology, and that actually turned into how demons are actually aliens. And obviously, 100 years ago, like demons were what we now call aliens and alien abduction and things like this. Again, that's just another way how the different, you wouldn't ever link demonology with UFOs, but again, another example of that link between the two subjects happening. And in terms of guests, I think my favorite has, apart from yourself, Craig.
Obviously.
Yeah, I have to say that one. One of our first guests as well, so appreciated that as well at the time.
Nerve-wracking being on both sides of it, I tell you.
Yeah, definitely eye-opening, being on, like I say, being on both sides. But I would say, who we mentioned then, John Edmonds. Mm. I wasn't too aware of him. I knew Greg's been into it quite a few years. His story's been going on since the 90s. And he so basically, a lot of people heard of Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah.
He's got his TV show and Bob Bigelow. Apparently, Bob Bigelow was trying to buy his ranch before Skinwalker because of what was going on at Stardust Ranch. And then it basically says John Edmonds, his claim is that Bob Bigelow's basically took everything that happened at his ranch and then said, made it happen at Skinwalker because he didn't get to buy his ranch. Basically said that his ranch, Stardust Ranch, is like Skinwalker on acid. Because the things that happened to him are 10 times what happens at Skinwalker. But talking to him, we had to call his landline number in America, in Arizona, which was, took a while to figure out how to do it on Skype initially. You just don't have the internet, he doesn't have mobile phone.
It was crazy.
He's out in the sticks in Arizona. we had to phone him on his landline. But he was a really great guy to talk to, totally genuine. And
how much did that cost?
It was just through Skype. It was just like a couple of quid for unlimited US. Yeah. It was a bit of a I've always wanted to speak to this guy. His story is amazing, and Ghost Adventures have done an episode there. It's a popular topic of conversation in. For people who know about Skinwalker Ranch, most of them would probably not necessarily know about this Stardust Ranch. The guy is claimed to have killed 19 aliens with a samurai sword. So
that's just a bit of what happened.
a bit
of his story.
Yeah, but like I said, when you speak to the guy, he's sounds completely credible. Hmm. He believes everything he's saying. He doesn't care if anybody doesn't believe him. So I was messaging him going back to your point, I was messaging him for some time to try and get him on, dropping him messages. And then one Friday, he put a post up on his Facebook page and I made a comment underneath saying, I'll try and get a hold of you. And then he responded to my message and he was like, can you do now? And I say, God. So I messaged Ash and said, look, this guy, we can do it. So we put it off for a few hours just so we could try and figure out the technicals and everything. And we managed to get a hold of him and it was, could have spoke for, like when we were chatting to you as well, Craig, on our podcast, we could have spoke for hours. I really felt we could just, it was just a conversation we were just having.
Yeah.
And same with this guy, he could have spoke for forever about it. The stuff he was coming out with was stuff we'd never really experienced on air from any other guest. And his story stands up to this day. It's the same story he's been saying from day one, and mad.
You got DNA results as well from the aliens that he's killed, and that you can view the DNA results that he had at this alien blood analyzed. And it comes back as like being a weird combination of different, but it is an unidentifiable substance that he.
It was like plant based and stuff, wasn't it?
So how's that not gone further then? I mean, surely if he'd have sent it off, unless it's somebody that he knows that could do the DNA testing for him, if he sent it off to any old lab somewhere,
it was a university sent off, like a university, there, right? University lab.
The guy died mysteriously as well.
Yeah, he did the testing.
That's
I think he was I think he's quite a well-known scientist as well. It wasn't just like your average Joe who works in the hospital or whatever.
Yeah,
I think he was quite a prominent guy. Mysterious circumstances, but.
Well, I'll be honest, I've not actually checked that one out, but I will do. I'll check out that episode of your podcast because it sounds fascinating to me.
Oh, It is, and we were there on Skype. The guy was on the phone, so he couldn't see us.
But we could see each other.
We could see each other, and he was there, and we're just like,
yeah,
what? This is the stuff he was coming out with. But as I mentioned, it's so, it was just so enthralling, the story that he's telling, and his account. And it's like, look, I don't care if anybody believes me. I don't care. It makes no difference to me. I come off there and you just don't, mind was blown. It was just so much of this unnatural phenomena that's happening to him.
So without sort of naming any other names, have you found, because obviously you've done a lot of episodes now, so have you spoken to people that afterwards you've thought, that is an absolute load of old guff? Or have you found that most people are credible, shall we say?
Over to you, Ash.
Yeah, I think, obviously, with John Edmund's story, and we've had other guests on where you just think to yourself, like, this can't be true. Like, there's too much, and it's just too much. And you just think, there's no way that this can be true. But then I also think that it's not me. I'm not experiencing it, so who am I to say this guy's full of shit?
Yeah,
it could be happening to him. Who are we? Like that, and we always say, like with the podcast, that we don't give an opinion on the guests, on the stories to come out with. It's just we give a platform. We've had people on the show that have never talked about their experiences before. They've always been scared to talk about it, being ridiculed. They never need to find anywhere to talk about it. We've had a number of times we've had basically like people in tears talking about their experiences. And it's just that it's a platform for them. And this is their story. It's up to the listeners to take from it what they want to take from it. Whether they want to believe it, whether they think it's all a load of crap, it's up to them. We don't give our opinion on it. I mean, I have my opinions on some of it, but that's my opinion. But again, I wasn't there. I didn't experience it. So who am I to judge whether I believe that or not?
Who's been your favourite guest then?
Apart from you.
Don't say me.
Greg. I think we had a guy recently, a guy called Michael, that reached out to us and said he'd got this experience to tell. And we spoke to him, going backwards and forwards a few times. Then we set up the call, spoke to him. The episode was out just a few weeks ago, and I really enjoyed speaking to him because, again, his story or his account of things that have happened to him since birth, basically, you look at it all and you go, that sounds like too much. It does. Like Ash said, some people's accounts of things are too much. You can't see how all this can happen to one person and then not be on the front page of every newspaper in the world. But this guy reached out to us, and it was the first time he'd properly talked to anybody about him. And we could see him. It was on the Zoom call. And you could see the anguish in his eyes. You could, when he was telling you some of the stuff, some very personal stuff at some points, you couldn't help but be drawn into his experiences. And it was quite powerful at times. Some of the stuff he was talking about was quite dark. Like personal things, quite dark. And I really enjoyed talking to him. He was a really nice guy. Seemed completely genuine. And he was definitely one of my favourites because these people just reach out to us. A lot of the... So John Edmonds, we did go out to him. We've been trying to get hold of him for some time. But we get a lot of people just come to us and say, this happened to me. And then when we start talking to them, it all comes out. And like Ash said, we spoke to somebody, she's in tears. We've had, and when they're telling all this stuff, and they've never felt brave enough to speak to anybody because they've always been ridiculed on the internet by trolls
and
all these groups.
And of course, it's very, a lot of the stuff's very personal, isn't it, as well? So and it can be quite emotional as well. I mean, I know, you know, from personal experience, things that happen to you can be very emotional. And obviously talking to, you know, with all due respect, relative strangers, which we are when we're talking to these people, it can sometimes be quite difficult to bring the stories out of them, really. And I think the fact that they do open up to you is, you know, great, you know, it's great on your part that you can bring that out of people. What about you, Ash? Who stands out for you?
Apart from John Edmonds, we had this is where I remember his name. Danny Moss, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't heard of him. He has shows on Amazon Prime and other streaming services. He's a ghost paranormal investigator.
Okay.
And I hadn't really heard of him before. So I watched a few episodes in advance of talking to him. And I just thought he was really great to talk to. Open, and some of the stuff that he had done, both as part of his show and both just him, was just fascinating and really sort of helped me sort of see more into that side of things rather than the UFO side of things. Because like I say, that side of it is more pretty new to me. But like talking to him and some of the other people on the more paranormal side made me want to get into that side more, to do my own investigations, go on my own, what they call ghost hunts or whatever. Greg's got some of the spirit boxes and other equipment that I'm keen to get out with Greg, because me and Greg have actually met in person. We barely knew each other before we started the podcast. Yeah.
It's a long distance romance, is that?
Yeah, definitely. Like 200 miles apart.
I did often wonder actually how you two guys got together doing this, because obviously you're in Oxford, Greg, and Ash, you're in Warrington, is it?
I'm in Manchester now, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, even so, it's still quite a distance, isn't it? So who would you really like to get on then? Who are you chasing? Who for both of you would be your ideal guest? Go on, Greg, I'll ask you that one first.
So there is a person that I would love to have a chat to, David Icke. Now, David Icke is one of those people, certainly over recent times, where it's quite divisive and people either like his stuff or don't. But I started reading some of his books about 15 years ago or so, and some of the stuff in there is quite an eye-opener. And it is more conspiracy-based, but he also talks about... which is one side that I'd like to speak to him about. Everybody's like, everything's based around love and light, and that we go to this place that when we leave our bodies, where we're just a light energy. And he was speaking about that years ago when I was reading his books. And some of the guests that we speak to about paranormal stuff, they talk about lights. And we spoke to a guy who claimed that he was almost the sort of the entrance and messenger that people would go to when they pass over, to say whether or not they fulfilled everything in their life before they go up to heaven or onwards. And he was talking about lights and energy. So David Icke would be definitely one for me. Just, I think it would be a great conversation. Some of his stuff he's talking about COVID and that, I'm not that interested, but his other stuff, definitely.
Ash?
For me, this is on. I did try and reach out to him during the start of the podcast. Because a lot of times social medias are managed by like companies rather than them, so it's quite hard to get hold of him without having to go through agents. And his agent did get back to me and say like, he's a bit busy at the minute. It was Nick Frost. And it's at the time, it's when like True Seekers was coming out on Amazon. He's been like a massive, massive fan of Nick Frost and Simon Pegg since Spaced. When I was a teenager, just grew up on all their stuff, their shows and the films. And I know that they're big into like this side of things, like the unknown, non-paranormal stuff. So for me, definitely would be Nick Frost. And I think I'm due to try again with his agent. I think a lot of it's with timing.
Yeah. It'd be quite a coup, that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, okay. definitely. I think the most famous person we've had on is probably Jo Wood.
Yep.
She's quite fun to talk to as well.
Yeah.
She has her own podcast and she had some crazy stories as well. But she's
fortunate enough to be in a position of A, being an ex-wife of one of the Rolling Stones. And so she had Robbie Williams on her podcast. She's had all sorts of celebrities that have had experiences. So yeah, but she was an interesting character.
Tap her up for a few contacts then while you were
yeah.
So when's Robbie Williams coming on your podcast?
We have tried Robbie.
Well, you know, you've got to keep trying, haven't you? You've just got to keep pegging away. No pun intended, and you know, just keep moithering these people until they either block you or crumble. It's either one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's great stuff. I mean, I've listened to some of your episodes. I'll hold my hand up. I've listened to them all because I don't have time to listen to every podcast of everyone that I follow.
It's a full-time job just doing that, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. So I sort of pick and choose and sort of listen to the ones that sort of pique my interest more than, you know, because some I'm more into the paranormal side of things than UFOs. But, you know, as I talk to more people like yourself, for instance, Ash, and, you know, I mean, I spoke to Philip Mantle for the last podcast I did, and I've spoke to Paul Sinclair as well, who was fantastic, by the way, really, really, really great guy. The more that I talk to people like that, the more interest I get into the UFO side of things. And I agree, you know, there is a correlation between, and we spoke about this when I was a guest on your podcast, that there is a correlation between, does seem to be between paranormal and UFO activity and where you get big cats and where you get cryptos. I mean, for instance, you probably know Ash about Winter Hill, and you know about the stuff that's going on up there at the minute. I spoke to Mick McLaren. There's a lot of crypto stuff going on up there. There's a lot of UFO stuff going on up there. So, you know, these areas have definitely got areas of energy that are sort of focusing all these different things. So yeah, it is a very, very interesting subject. Can we, before we finish, can we just talk about individually your favorite case that you've either read about or you've researched? It doesn't necessarily have to be one that you've been involved with. So Greg, your favorite paranormal and Ash, your favorite UFO case. Do you want to start, Greg?
Yeah. So one that's always fascinated me, right from, and it's probably one of the earlier ones that I picked up on that got me into the paranormal, was the Enfield poltergeist case. So this happened in North London and affected this family. There was the mum, Peggy, couple of daughters, son, and started having some weird experiences in the house. Police turned up. It's one of the most documented poltergeist cases in the world. There's loads of documentaries on it. There's video clips of this spirit speaking through Janet, the girl, and you can hear this spirit talking. She puts water in her mouth and this sound still comes out of her. And The Conjuring 2 is based on that story of this poltergeist activity. So it's one that I always dip into. It comes up frequently around Halloween, all those kind of times. And it's just one of them cases that's never totally been sort of debunked. There's so much evidence around it, audio recordings, there's books on it. The girls even admitted to hoaxing some of the bits when they were caught doing it.
Yeah.
But they said we've only done a little bit of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
They held their hands up and some of it's weird. Some of the audio tapes are quite chilling.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my most favourite one, I think, just because it stood the test of time.
Yeah. There was a dramatisation, wasn't there, a few years ago with
Timothy Spall.
Yeah. There was one part, I think, I think it was a three-parter, wasn't it? And there was one part of the third episode where they were recreating the voice coming through Janet. She was sat in a chair, I think.
That's it.
And it was really quite it was so well done. It was really disturbing the way that they did it. And you would imagine that would have been toned down for a mass audience. So what actually went on in the house, I would imagine, is probably a lot worse than that. So, but no, it's a story that's interested me over the years. Poltergeists are a thing that I really enjoy looking into and reading about. And it's a disturbing story. Ash, what about you? What's your favourite UFO story?
So this is probably going to be pretty cliche, but this is one that when I was first getting into it, like when I was a kid, when I had my sighting, and then I went to like the library and got what books I could. This is one that's just always sort of been there, and I mean, it's Rendlesham. You can't get away from it in the UK. It is our most famous case, and it's the most famous case for a reason. There's just so many levels to it. There's obviously got the government side, the military side of it. You got these high-ranking officials that say this is what happened. You got recordings, the audio recordings. You've got years later, you've got the binary code, and other people then coming forward and saying they were part of it. It's just absolutely fascinating case. I think it would be. I mean, it's been obviously done to death, and I think it always will be. It's always going to be debated back and forth: what happened, what didn't happen, who believes who. Obviously, there's been lots of infighting and arguing between different people that were there or weren't there at the time. But it's just overall, it's just absolutely fascinating case. It wasn't a one-off. It was multiple times or multiple nights, lots of witnesses. It stood the test of time. It's 40 years later and it's still being debated.
Yeah.
As it was when it first came to light the years afterwards.
Yeah, they call it the British Roswell, don't they? I was name dropping again when I spoke to Philip Mantle. I asked him about Rendlesham, what he thought of it, and he had some interesting ideas on it. And you're right, Ash, it's a story I think that will continue to rumble on because there's so many people have got so many not differing accounts, but you know, they're not all the same accounts. There are always people coming forward with new aspects to it, even 40 years on. So, and of course, that area down there on the East Coast is just absolutely rife, isn't it, with all sorts of UFO activity. So, great stuff. Well, yeah. Thanks, guys. I've really enjoyed it. It's been great to hop between the paranormal and UFOs and at some points tie them together, which is something that I think all three of us are quite keen to do. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much. Good luck with I don't need to wish you good luck with your podcast because it's fantastic. It's been going for many, many episodes now, and you've had some great guests on there. So if any of the listeners to this podcast have been daft enough not to listen to yours, and they need to go and find it, and they need to binge listen because it's a great thing that you've done. Just very quickly, do you want to just remind us of where we can find you on the internet and on social media?
Yeah, well, the podcast, like I say, is called Pursuit of the Paranormal Podcast. It's on all the main podcast streaming platforms. I've got the own website, which is Pursuit the Paranormal at Cult UK, and we've got the same name on Facebook, on Instagram, so you can reach out to us there. I'm Ash Ellis on Facebook, Greg's Greg Tomlinson, so you can find us there if you want to just reach out and let us know. But yeah, thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
Good luck with your podcast. It's hard work, and I've been listening to yours, and you had some great guests on as well, so thanks for having us on.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Talking to you. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Speak soon.
Pursuit of the Paranormal with Ash and Greg.